This is your shrink wrapper conducting a spectacular interview with Dr. Mark Pertl. I know it will be spectacular because Dr. Pertl is an inspired doctor in physical therapy, and I am an inspired shrink wrapper. And so it's a 100% guarantee whoever's listening to this is going to be greatly rewarded. The subject matter is comes under the heading of mind-body phenomena and connection, specifically related to physical pain, but it gravitates and filters on into emotional pain as well. Dr. Pertl currently has founded a pain program at Sierra Tucson in Tucson, Arizona.
That's correct.
Is that correct?
I'm no longer at Sierra Tucson. I'm currently in private practice, and I am a resort in Catalina, Arizona. But I did start the pain program out at Sierra Tucson.
Right. Is the pain program continuing?
Yes.
Are they following the original directives?
I don't know. I haven't been out there in almost. Got it off to a good start.
Excellent. Yeah. So you're the fundador.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And then also, would you say then now you're carrying on the same philosophy and techniques at Miraval now?
Yes. Although the population of people that I work with has expanded. Originally, it sort of makes sense for a doctor of physical therapy to work with pain patients, but my program was mindfulness-based, and mindfulness is a method of self-inquiry, teaching a person how to see inside mind-body and examine their own suffering states. There isn't a limit to what someone can examine, their thoughts and body sensations, reactions to triggers in the world. And so when I started this pain program at Sierra Tucson, I was working with people that had a nervous system chronic pain signals on an intense and ongoing basis. But those same people had developed sort of emotional disorders, depression and anxiety, sort of secondarily to the pain signals, and very often, because of the way pain is treated in this country, they became chemically dependent on their opiate-based pain medicines.
Uh-huh.
So the pain population had what are called sort of dual diagnosis. They had many co-occurring disorders, and after a time, it was found that my mindfulness-based helping not only reduce the pain signals, but get people off of their mood disorders. And so in a very short time, my other colleagues at Sierra, after leaving Sierra Tucson, I developed, or I should say expanded my program to include people with other, what I call stress illnesses. That's what I do at Miraval. I help guests with stress illness, and that's what I do in private practice.
Now, when you say stress illness, I'm thinking that couldn't stress illness eventually lead to physical pain issues?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so chronic pain I define as a stress illness. And here's why I call it a stress illness. And this comes out of my pain by Beverly Thorne in the study. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so when you take a pain great enough and lasts long enough, that's their stress. Pain is universally stressful if it's too intense or lasts too long. But anything can be stressful and seemingly overwhelming. It could be loss of a job and the financial situation that you might be in, chip issues, some other health issue. I regarded this study, this very universal way that stress then becomes a mind-body problem. And here's how. The stress, which becomes overwhelming, is always judged by the person, and the judgment is called the appraisal. And they found that there are generally three appraisals that people make related to a lousy stress. Something, a lousy thing arises and we judge it. And we either think it's a loss, and if we do, or we think it's a threat, and if we think it's a threat, we feel fear, or we think it's some sort of injustice, like it's not fair, and if that appraisal has been made by us, anger arises. Mm-hmm. So sadness, fear, and anger are the emotions that arise, but if we then, as this person, who, this ego, who this lousy thing has happened to, sort of get stuck on the story. Let's say we get stuck on the story of loss, and we go to bed with the story of loss, we wake up with it, it's not just story of loss for a day or a week or a month, but it's a year. The story of loss not only creates sadness, but the sadness gets bigger. And that's so depression evolves and arises as a long-term story of loss can be conscious. Then changes the brain and the biochemistry, mm-hmm. and the brain actually, because of neuroplastic change, actually creates sort of circuitry that becomes well used and easy to use, and when this circuitry gets used, thoughts of loss arise. And so depressed, they feel heavy body sensation or story of loss, and therefore they're in, and that happens with story of threat, and story of threat can manifest in all kinds of bodily problems, chronic pain being one of them, anxiety, PTSD, hoarding, eating disorders, addictions of all kinds, you name it. Mm-hmm. Story of injustice, if that lasts for a long time, usually anxiety issues usually send you to the doctor. And bad enough, that's when you go to rehab, right? But the rage, for whatever reason, people usually don't go see the doctor for rage. And if that gets bad enough, you go to prison. So that's how we divide it up in this country. You know, you have a stress illness, and you either go to rehab or you go to prison. And that's
interesting. So when you go to an emergency room, you go to triage, and the nurse sends you to either this specialty or that specialty. But if you don't end up in the emergency room, you do your own triage, you end up either in rehab,
that's
prison,
right.
or in psychotherapy,
yeah,
or
that's
pain
right.
management.
Sure, absolutely. That's right.
You triage, most people triage themselves like
yeah,
this.
Yeah, it's kind of a self-sorting thing.
It's amazing, yeah. Yeah. So that's why mindfulness is important, because you want to know where you're triaging
completely,
yourself.
Completely. And also to know that the system runs itself. Or I think a lot of the shame and blame can be taken off of the person, because once a mind-body network begins to produce thoughts of a certain theme and biochemicals that correspond to that theme, loss, threat, or injustice, the mind-body network will continue to do that. And I teach the people that I work with from the very beginning to do this exercise, because one thing I always share with them along these lines is I want to and here's my each one of those cells is like its own person. Thousands of chemical cascades are happening in a cell in every moment. Bonds are being broken and put back together, and each time a chemical bond is creative biochemicals locking and unlocking from these. So I ask a person, I said, "Sir, are you in control?" And a person can see, "Yes, I think I am." And I might say to them, "Well, are you growing your own fingernails right now?" Realize right in that moment that you can't stop. Your fingernails are, mm-hmm. your heart is beating itself, your food is digesting itself. It's all happening without you. And here's the weird, you're not even thinking your own thoughts. The nervous system produces, so they can see and prove to themselves that they're actually not doing the thinking. I ask them to close their eyes and get in contact with the voice in their head.
Mm-hmm.
And very often what I say is, close your eyes and count to yourself inside your head. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And listen to that virtual voice inside your head. And when you think you've sort of zeroed in on it, stop counting and then ask yourself, what's the next thought that is? And yet, a thought arises. And if you set that one aside, ask again, what's next? And you don't know. And again, what's next? You don't know. And that's what, that thoughts are like popcorn, like a popcorn machine. You don't know, but the ones that do pop, the reason certain topics show up is because it's emotional content. It's emotional content for self that's had the loss, or the self that's under threat, or the self that had an injustice perpetrated on it. That idea of self is generating the emotion, therefore the concentration, attention, and that emotion and the attention form a closed loop. All of your emotional topics just popping up into random fashion based on how you're trying to walk through
today. But perfectly logically.
Perfectly logically. Mm-hmm. One thing that won't pop up in either of our mind-body networks today is Mandarin Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
It's not in there,
mm-hmm.
right? But anything that's in there is liable to pop up based on some trigger, and the trigger can be internal, can be one thought that triggers another, or a body sensation that you have an emotional attachment to, let's say pain, some pain that you remember that's scary to you, that represents some problem, that can trigger a thought, and then that another thought, a cascade of thoughts, or a sight or a sound in the external world. You see something that reminds you of something, mm-hmm. you feel a body sensation, and that causes a whole train of thinking.
You know, as far as our being mindful and aware and conscious of all the things going on in our bodies, let's say that's, it seems like very clearly that's very unlikely, right?
It's, you can't pay attention to 100 quadrillion things.
Now, the next step would be, if that's hard to do, then imagine, I'm imagining now all the quadrillion things that are going on, what sounds like the word psychologically or mentally in thought. Move away from physiology for a second,
right.
which is quadrillion, quadrillion, trillion,
yeah. Yeah.
and go into like millions of and trillions of thought, let's say, partial thoughts,
yes.
whole thoughts.
Yes, it's infinity times infinity.
Mm-hmm. So it's hard to keep up with all this.
Completely.
Yeah, but one thing I wanted to like make a parallel to, let's say, when a child grows up and learns how to walk, let's say at the beginning it's very awkward and uncoordinated and falls and everything, and it takes that infant like tremendous concentration to learn how to crawl and then walk, and this goes on for a while until at some point the child gets to the point where they walk without even thinking at some age.
That's right. It gets typed into the, it becomes a conditioned, typed in motor program in the mind body.
And it's no, and there's no consciousness anymore. Mm-hmm. And you say, well, can you like describe all the series of things that go on while you're walking? No, I don't know what I'm doing. I just walk.
That's right. It just happens by itself.
Yeah. So at one time, we were conscious of maybe everything at one point as we're going from fetal embryonic development, let's say.
Possible, bombarded with information.
Yeah, if there is a mind behind, let's say, the zygote, the original juncture of a sperm and an ova,
uh-huh.
and if there is a mind in those two cells, that mind has to now develop into a whole human being by going through millions and millions of, like, revolutionary changes, right?
Countless.
And then it comes out, and the child finally is formed and is born, and you say, oh, hello, can you tell me how you got here? What are you talking about? I don't know how he got here.
That's right.
if the baby could talk, you know.
Right. That's the amazing thing. It all happens by itself. That's sort of the greater intelligence behind this idea of self. You know, when we talk about Eastern mysticism, that's the Atman within, the God or spirit inside, or Jesus would call it Christ consciousness, or Buddha nature, or you could just call it from a scientific perspective, life. Life does its own evolving, you know, without, and the way Siddhartha Gautama, the historical Buddha, described it, he says there's a no-self there. You don't need a self to grow your fingernails.
Mm-hmm.
It just happens by itself.
So now you're getting, would you say now you're getting into spirituality here?
Sure, yeah. It's, I mean, that's the totally ungrasped, that's the great mystery, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all these things are connected, you know, and that's how your pain experience can be your transcendent spiritual experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because you start to see beyond the conditioned level of being. The I learn to believe that things that happened to me gave me a sense of identity, a story. I learn to look beyond that story. I learn to find and rest in the peace, God's peace, the indwelling spirit, the consciousness, the mere clarity, as the Buddhists would describe it, beyond the notion of self. And when I learned how to do that, a story falls away and the conditioning vision patterns become visible, and I have a choice to transcend. And then all of a sudden you do transcend into this higher idea. This maybe that's how human consciousness evolves ultimately, is through.
Well, yeah, the pain would be like the rocket fuel that sends you up into space, right?
Yeah, everybody has their limit, right?
Uh-huh.
You know, everybody at some point pain will wake you up.
Yeah, especially there's some people that need an alarm clock, and some people wake up on their own. You know?
Uh-huh. Right.
So yeah, so pain would be like an alarm clock.
Yeah, or I mean, if you want to use that sort of sleep analogy, a person is more inclined to wake up during a nightmare than a regular dream. A nightmare will tend to wake you, just like your pain in waking life will tend to wake you even further.
Yeah, terrific. Yeah. So everybody regards it as bad.
Right.
Which is kind of a misunderstanding.
Because maybe we could appraise it differently. Instead of the pain being a lost threat or injustice, it could be a gift. It could be an opportunity. It could be grace.
Now, there's some orthopedic doctor that wrote a book about, you might know the name of this doctor, wrote a book about people with severe back pain, chronic back pain. Have you ever heard of it? And supposedly he came up with a technique so that they don't need surgery or medications
anymore.
This
is John Sarno, are you talking?
That's it,
yeah.
So how does he figure into the mind-body?
Well, best as I understand Sarno's work, he was one of the first MDs to acknowledge a mind-body connection, which I think is ultimately important, a huge step forward. I have worked with some folks who follow Sarno, and I think there is, by some of the people that follow Sarno, the understanding is that nothing, there is no physical reason for pain.
Mm.
And that's sort of going two extremes, actually,
mm-hmm.
where like in Buddhism, it's the middle way. So pain experience arises often as a result of a physical injury, and often is perpetuated by stories of loss, threat, or injustice that then become conditioned and sensitize the nervous system, where it evolves into a psycho-emotional, your pain experience is triggered psycho-emotionally, and so the tissues have done as much healing as they can do, and yet you still stay in pain because your nervous system is now hypersensitive. And that doesn't mean that the tissues are what I would call fit. The tissues are sensitive. It's a closed system in the sense that sensitizing thoughts create sensitive tissues, and sensitive tissues create sensitizing thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And so John Sarno is right. It is a mind-body problem.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to treat both. And so in my work with pain patients, I act as the therapist, the mind-body therapist. I teach them practices for their mind and their body, and the emotions that lie in the middle also. You know, the whole thing. I also include, because mindfulness goes into spirituality, I also include the spirit.
Right. As far as, let's say, aside from physical pain, let's say there are so many other illnesses that may not be painful, like, let's say, maybe close to pain, like ulcerative colitis.
Right. Well, how about high blood pressure, for example?
Yeah.
That's one. Mm-hmm. That if you know that you have high blood pressure, somebody told you and scared you about it,
mm-hmm.
Then the mere fact that you're scared about it will tend to raise your blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And then the very next time you get it measured, it's a little high and there's more concerning words, and then there's some and if you develop some sort of, and let's say you have a family history, and let's say you have other stresses in your life, the other stresses in your life are actually context for increasing the story of threat.
Mm-hmm.
You see, oh no, I'm having trouble with my boss at work, my job is threatened here, I've got a mortgage, and I have this high blood pressure. This is not good for my high blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
You see, and
mm-hmm.
so therefore it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of, you build your own tangled web.
Mm-hmm.
And the mind body will very reliably produce illnesses if the stress that you're under is too intense and lasts too long.
So let's say that we don't know all the quadrillion chemical, neurophysiological
right.
reactions that are going on in our body, and yet we're completely responsible, let's say, for how we think. So there's an area in which we cannot...
We're responsible when we're awake.
Mm-hmm.
When we're not, when the 100 quadrillion things is not running us, when we're not the robot, when we're not the software, when we're actually observing the software running, that's when we're ultimately responsible.
Yeah, when we're asleep and on autopilot,
yes.
we don't take responsibility.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit the unconscious mind might be messing around in there, I don't know. But.
Oh yeah, for sure. And mindfulness helps you look into that a little bit too.
Yeah.
But it is 100 quadrillion things, and you can't see everything. Just like Freud said, you can't drain the swamp. The swamp is so deep, but if you're looking and you see it, it's not unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
You see, but you have to be looking.
Yeah. So ultimately, the buck stops here, right?
Yeah, I have a practice that I like to share that's very easy, and everybody loves this because it doesn't involve actually doing anything other than what you'd want to do anyway, which is stay in bed longer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here's the practice. If you wake up, and now I'm giving you permission to stay in your bed 15, 30 minutes longer, roll outside and close your eyes. And then as your eyes are closed, what you're going to see there is you're going to see a black screen. I'll ask you to look at the back of your forehead. And you won't see the back of your forehead. You'll just see what looks like black space. Stare into that black space. And as you stare into that black space, I want you to ask yourself, what's next? Okay, so take an observer role, become curious, and ask yourself, what's next? And allow yourself to drift and wonder in curiosity, what's going to show up in the space? And if a thought arises, let it go and ask immediately again, what's next? And if you that perfect place between wakeful to find yourself in this place where subconscious archetypes emerge out of your mind-body network. I'll give you an example. I was doing this just the other day,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden, I believed I was standing in a room, and there was a very large, big brown box, 6 feet square, cube,
mm-hmm.
right in front of me. And I'm wrestling with this box. I'm like, get this box out of here. But then all of a sudden, because I'd set the intention to meditate, the observer clued me in. There's no brown box here. And I realized, oh, there's no brown box. And all of a sudden the box disappears. And you get to see, oh, so I'm dealing with a little bit of my, I have some programming around struggle. Okay, great. It's good that I saw that today. And when I woke up, instead of waking up, because let's say I didn't see it, and I woke up and I felt like it was like waking up on the wrong side of the bed, a little frustrated, grumpy, you know, because I saw it, and I realized there was no big brown box in front of me, there was no obstruction, there was no struggle, I woke up happy, you see, and so that's a practice that anybody can do, and give yourself a little
that's excellent.
At it.
Excellent.
are we getting close?
We are at 12:16 and a half right now. That's probably your time limit, is it not?
It's getting really close.
And you know, the audience listening to us is going to be really frustrated right now, because I'm sure they're waiting for the next episode of what you've got to offer. You know, so we'll have to keep them on tap, on the edge of their seats. Okay.
Thank you so much for inviting me. Connect with you after all these years, and then just to do this with you, it's been a pleasure.
Well, gee, I'm ecstatic at having you come on back here and see me and go through this, and possibly we can do another chapter.
Be happy
I
to.
Think this is a very big subject.
Oh, yeah, it's a huge subject.
So, Shrink Wrapper signing off to the podcast, and hopefully to be continued. Thank you very much.